Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women.
To drink our beers, prepare to die.
Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we are the Drunk Guys. And this week we are reading The Princess Bride, which has a much longer S. Morgenstern's classic tale of true love and high adventure, the good parts version by William Goldman. And who's starting with beer? We didn't figure that out.
I'll start with beer.
Cool.
All right. So one of the characters, this isn't actually for the beginning. One of the characters is a huge dude played by Andre the Giant in the movie. His name is Fezzik. And how does he kill people? Because he doesn't like use knives and stuff. He
just does big, strong.
His body odor.
Yeah. Probably body odor. But actually, he just goes and like crushes them in a big beer hug. This is Hazy Beer Hug by Goose Island. And it's a 6.8% hazy IPA. And it's okay. It's all right. Fine. Goose Island's, you know, trying to get on the hazy train.
I wanted to look something up. Andre the Giant. Okay, no, he wasn't quite our age when they filmed this, but do you know he was 40 when they filmed this movie? He looked like a lot older, especially as we get a lot closer to 40 or past it in some people's cases.
He must have not lived much longer.
No, he died at 46.
Yeah.
But in giant years, that's a lot.
It's like whatever reverse dog years are, or I don't know.
Many years. Okay, so everyone knows the movie. We'll talk about that a lot, I'm sure. Oh, but yeah. It was first a book that came out in 1973. And William Goldman...
That much length between, or time between the two of them? That's surprising.
Yeah, and he was, at the time, he was already an Oscar-winning screenwriter. He wrote, what was it? Nate spit it out like he
Butch
knew
Cassidy
it.
Yeah. And the Sundance Kid.
And he shit this book out, and along with Marathon Man. Did you ever see that? That was also a movie with Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Like, is it safe?
Was fine.
It's fucking, it's yeah. It's...
The final line of the book, there's a little epilogue where it just talks about the author. And the final line is, and the book, and his book, Marathon Man, has dazzled dentist's office everywhere.
Oh.
Something like that. That is final line. Yeah, boom.
Well, he was interestingly busy in this time period writing original screenplays, his own novels. And then in 1976, he wrote the adapted screenplay for All the President's Men and won an Oscar for that. So he was like big shit at the time. So it is kind of surprising it took so long to turn this into a movie.
So the book, I think, didn't do very well.
It did not. It was not a hit.
So there's your reason nobody was interested in it, because nobody had ever heard of it.
But I'm just surprised that nobody even just tried to... maybe things were different in the early 70s, that nobody just optioned it right away. I feel like today, if somebody made a movie... and one, it was a big fucking movie, and then they put out a book 18 months later, studios would be tripping over themselves to sign buy the rights for that. Before it's even published, probably. Before that, you know, just because of the name recognition. But maybe things were a little different then. Anyway, he was a writer guy, and he wrote this. And it has a frame that is, like, the introduction. I'll tell you, I tried to read this book. I've read it before, and I tried to read it many years ago. And I was like skimming the introduction, and I was like, wait, this isn't the real book? It's not, it's the abridged? Oh, I don't want to read the abridged version, because I'm an idiot and did not pick up on tone.
It does say abridged, yeah.
It just says, like, right away, it's the abridged version. Like, oh, I don't want to read the abridged version. That's cheating.
Yeah, the book was super meta from the first page, and I was pretty, I couldn't tell if I was reading an introduction to the book, but I guess it is the introduction, but it's also fake. So it's very confusing.
It's kind of it's advanced self-aware. Isn't the right word, but like very modern.
Yeah.
For a book from 50 years ago.
For a joke fantasy book.
In my mind, this is the part. So it's a kid's book, right? It is supposed to be.
Sort of.
It's supposed to be for kids. I mean, it is, but this is the part he wrote so like the parents could have something they thought was funny, you know?
I don't know if that's. I feel like he wrote it so people who knew like the Three Musketeers could laugh at how he's making fun of those kind of books, because it's kind of a parody of those things. And you need to have
it is
to get all the jokes. You need to have read those like Ivanhoe kind of books to, you know, when there's abridged chapters. Like, oh, this chapter was really fucking boring. And it went on and on about like what the princess's hats were and the palace intrigue of the Duke's second butler and all that. And like, that is what those books from the 1700s and 1800s are like often.
And sometimes
still
are.
I don't think a kid would get any of that. I don't think a kid would pick, would, I mean, I don't know. Maybe kids were different back then too, but I don't think so. I don't think they were like, ah, I see. This is like the Scarlet Pimpernel. But whoever it was for, well, you need to be a reader to get all those jokes.
When he has his kid read the book, his kid doesn't like the book. So I guess they were the same.
Which now, having read a bunch of these classics, I can relate.
Oh, yeah.
That's just like how these classic books read.
Yeah.
I never would have read, what was that recent one we did? Not Jane Eyre, but the other one.
Wuthering Heights. Yeah,
the Brontosaurus.
Wuthering Heights.
Wuthering Heights, yes. I would never have read more than 10 pages of Wuthering Heights if I didn't have to.
Well, now you had to.
Yeah, I know I had to, yeah.
Well, we were
suffered through it.
Chained to this fucking Sisyphean job of reading books for this podcast. We've angered with punishment from a god that we don't even know we angered. So the whole introduction is like, my kid, I thought I loved this book as a kid. My father was from the country of Florin, which is like vaguely by Switzerland, and read this to me. And when I was sick with pneumonia back when it was a thing, and that would lay you out for a month, and it was such a meaningful experience to me. I wanted it for my son. And he has a whole long thing. Oh, I couldn't find a copy of the book, and I had to do, and it goes on and on and on. And there's lots of little jokes sprinkled in there. And ultimately, the kid's like, that book sucked, Dad. I've read one chapter, and I gave up on it. He's like, what? How could you? He says, it's really fucking boring. And then the dad flips through it, and he realizes, oh, my God, it is terribly boring. My dad was just skipping shit all the time. It's like my dad recognized this book was a... Just came on my face here. A diamond in the rough, which is this beer from Sand City, which is a double IPA. And he's like, I'm gonna buff out that diamond or whatever. That's a great beer. And so he says, so here is my version. It's the good parts. I cut out all the bullshit and didn't add anything of my own. Enjoy. And you're like, that's 15% of the book already.
Yeah, I thought it was ironic how long this part that I didn't care about was. In a book where he frequently goes, I skipped all this shit because it's boring.
Was a joke? You know, there's so many levels of irony. I don't know if he meant that as a joke or not. Or if it's just that when the book came out, he didn't know there'd be a cult classic film that people would already buy into this.
Yeah, I would imagine
really sell it.
Almost everyone has seen the movie and almost no one has read this book these days.
Probably.
You could say that for just about every movie that was a book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Except Harry Potter.
Yeah, that was the one exception I was thinking.
Okay, so once you get past the introduction where William Goldman is now finally like, okay, so here's the story. You get first introduced to Buttercup, the teenage girl teenage farm girl who is going to be the most beautiful woman in the world, but she's also... really annoying because she like, and there's a farmhand named Wesley, and she is just a total bitch to him like all the time and just orders him around, and he always just says, as you wish. And then one day the prince's Prince Humperdinck's evil villain dude.
Count Chocula.
What's the name?
Rugen.
Count Rugen sees her. And it's like, oh, well, she's very, very pretty. I'm going to have to save that for later. And then brings Prince Humperdinck to the farm because Prince Humperdinck needs to get married. And also Prince Humperdinck's wife. Not Prince Humperdinck's wife. Somebody else's. Some other rich woman was like, oh.
And the princess, like his sister, I thought it was.
Sister.
The sister, she's really hot and... Well, I couldn't tell if she was really hot or just really gaudy in her attire. Because it goes on and on about how many different colors of makeup she has on at the same time. And her dress is so many different patterns.
She's the one that he's going to marry the princess from some other place. But then her wig falls off and she finds out she's bald. It's like, I can't marry this bald lady. Let me go find someone else to marry.
Oh, maybe that's right. But whatever happens is they have to have... Wesley has to leave. He goes to seek his fortune in, like, South Carolina.
Well, this is when he and Buttercup have found out that they love each other. And so he's like, I'm going to go away to get some money so I can afford to marry you. And she's like,
I'll
wait
of him
forever.
Instead of him just being like, you do? Sweet. he says like, no, I can't. I have nothing. I must go away and make my fortune.
He is a farm boy who somehow fails to make hay while the sun is out in this situation.
Mm. He does work for the worst farmer in the land.
But he gets the milk for free. Oh, wait, that's not quite how this... Oh, wait, it was. That guy had shitty milk.
But while he's gone, they receive word that his ship has been attacked by the dread pirate Roberts, who never leaves victims alive. So he's
and
dead.
He sometimes flies flags outside of his Maryland home that piss off. Oh, sorry, wrong. Is that wrong, Roberts?
But anyway, you know, pirates, they spend a lot of time on boats, right? So you figure.
Yes.
They.
Today, the internet.
Oh, yeah, true. With the exception of Somali pirates.
Well, make this metaphor digital. So I'm talking about real pirates because they chase waves. This is Wave Chaser from Montauk.
Are you cleaning out the fridge still?
What did I have around? Yeah. I've had this before. It's fine. You can buy it on the boat here in New York when you take the boat instead of the subway for those weird places where you can do that.
So far, it's the same thing as the movie. We'll say that a lot, probably.
Except the movie does all this part in 4 minutes.
The movie does the whole book in 17 minutes, though. That's my main problem with the movie. The movie trims the fat out of the book, but the book's actually pretty lean once it gets going. So by the time the movie, there's like nothing. It's so abrupt. As someone who saw it for the first time as an adult this weekend, it's like, wow, that really just fucking just boom, 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 boom. Everything. That's it. There's no.
We'll discuss the movie at the end, because otherwise we'll never get through the book.
Oh, that's true. Okay, fine. So then, because of those machinations set up in the first chapter, she is now betrothed to Buttercup is betrothed to Prince Humperdinck, who, I'll say that for later. And she's like, whatever, I will never
Humperdinck
love again.
Reference you were going to make?
I was not going to make maybe later, because the only Engelbert Humperdinck song I could think of is Please Release Me, which is what Wesley would sing much later in the book.
I couldn't tell you a single fucking song.
Yeah. He was born in India. Did you know that? I don't know why I know that. I'm 99% okay. Sure Engelbert, I think his parents, he's that old, it was like still the fucking Raj. Anyway. She gets kidnapped. Buttercup is betrothed. She gets kidnapped by the three goons from the movie. By Vizzini, except this time he's a hunchback. By Inigo Montoya, the fencing extraordinaire, grand wizard of fencing.
Mm-hmm. Not the grand cyclops of fencing.
No, he's different. That was a level even too high for... I think Wesley might be a grand cyclops at the end. And Fezzik, the giant Turkish wrestler, played by Andre the Giant. Who the only thing they got rid of the movie, because it was probably too hard for Andre the Giant, is that he rhymes things in the book. No, not the thing. And they're like, yeah, it's fine. And whatever, dude. But most of their dialogue is exactly this. They fight. Vizzini is the brains. Montoya is snarky. Fezzik is kind of dumb. And they are hired to kidnap and murder her, but make it look like it was people from Gildor, the other kingdom. So that way, we don't know who yet, but there's only a few more characters in the book, so you do. So they could... You exploit this for their own political gain.
As you do.
Some things don't change.
That is how diplomacy worked back then.
Well, it was either marry their sister or blame them for killing yours.
And if you were Habsburg, you always made the same choice.
Yeah, well, they're like the pioneers of multiple choice, where you're just guess C. They're like, fuck a sister, got it. And they just did that. C for consanguine.
It was largely uncles and nieces, which is actually even grosser somehow.
Wasn't it? I thought it was actually just a lot of cousins. But it was probably everything.
I don't know. I don't know what's grosser. I don't know if that's a debate we're ready to have.
It seems like it's older, old men and
I guess it depends on how old they were.
Young women.
It can't be the other way around. They won't have children. And if it's an old woman, she's not going to odds are she won't have any more kids in those days. It does feel grosser when there's a big age gap.
Yeah.
Well, and some people still manage to wank it. Anyway, so they kidnap her, and they're running away, and the goons are like, hey, Vizzini, I think someone's following us. And he says, inconceivable, as in the movie. And in this, he says it more hunchbackedly, but he says that. And then they see it is the man in black. It's Will Smith. He's coming to smack them in the face. And then he's like, they run away, and they go to the Cliffs of Insanity, which is a, isn't that that song by Eric Johnson? That guitar song? And then,
both people then, got that joke.
Yeah, Eric Johnson, famous listener of the Drunk Guys Book Club.
You never know.
He won a Grammy for that. Anyway, so they, I mean, it's just the fucking movie. They chase them, Fezzik becomes a man elevator, and he pulls them up the side of a mountain. The man in black is faster and somehow has a faster boat.
Well, he's a pirate. He's a wave chaser.
Oh, shit. They get to the top, and they say, Inigo Montoya, you stay here and kill that dude because you're the greatest swordsman in the world. The rest of us will continue on. You catch up with us. And then we get the first thing that you're like, I don't remember this in the movie. This wasn't there. Backstory of a character. Nate, you looked like you were going to jump in there.
No. Well, okay. So, yeah, there's a bunch of backstory, which is fine that they cut it from the movie.
It had, Don Quixote vibes. Maybe just because it was Spain, like dusty Spanish towns, but it felt like,
yeah, definitely like that. I mean, in the movie, he does this whole section, but he does it in like 20 seconds, just telling Wesley the thing instead of an entire chapter on his backstory, which is, you know, he gets
the job
done. It goes
so fast. It's like 2 minutes of reading, though. The book is really fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I see why they cut it for the film, but when I got to it in the book, I wasn't like, oh no, it's fine. It was entertaining. There are little jokes in there, but you find out that his father,
yeah, just his father was a master swordsmith who just loved the art, and a six-fingered man came and ordered the finest sword ever, and the man was like, what? And then his father was like, oh, a sword for a six-fingered man? I've never made one of those before. This will be my masterpiece. But the man, instead of paying for it, kills his father and slashes the boy in the face, thinking he's going to die. But instead, he doesn't and just becomes...
No, he leaves
him
alive.
Do it so he, does, he does it so he stays alive, because the kid tries to duel him and gets his ass beat. And he goes like, you're a kid, here's 11. A lesson for you.
Oh, right, fine. And then he goes on, and then the kid, you know, has all about revenge and just spends years of his life just learning the sword and becoming the greatest swordsman ever.
I like that he goes through the 10,000-hour rule. It's just like, he comes back after 10 years of being in the mountains, and the guy's like, you are the greatest swordsman. He goes to his father's friend, the other swordsmith. And he goes, you're the greatest swordsman. He's like, well, I've been gone for 10 years, which is, I guess, you know, however many, 87,000 hours, whatever the fuck the number was. And he's like, you spent that much time sword training? He's like, well, no, I had to sleep and take a shit sometimes. And then I used some of the time for warming up and some time for learning about not time. And he just like, he breaks down everything. But in the end, 54,000 hours of sword fighting. He's like, oh, that makes sense. And he's like, and he shows his moves, and he's like, you are greater than a master. You are a wizard sword fighter. You're a wizard, Harry.
Mm.
He's like, gracias. And now his whole life's revenge, his mission, the reason he's with the hunchback of Palermo is so he can go get revenge on this six-fingered man, who should be easy to find, but has proven difficult to locate.
Well, they don't have the internet yet.
No, they don't have, like, is there, like, a Tinder, but for, like, multiple fingered people, like, odd number of finger people, you know?
Bigfist.com?
Do you know the word for it is polydactyl, which sounds like the coolest dinosaur, honestly.
Those are polyamorous pterodactyls, yeah.
Ah, yes.
they, you know, very, very progressive, but the flocks keep breaking up because someone gets hurt every time. We said no feelings here, Terry.
Terry, very good.
They're not all named Terry, but that one coincidentally is.
Yep, done well there. That's how all their relationships are terra-donned up. Anyway, Nate, continue the story, please.
So anyway, so they're... When he couldn't find the six-fingered man, he becomes an alcoholic, you know, as you do.
Well, no judgment.
Been there, done that.
But instead, the brilliant Sicilian is like, no, work for me instead, and then you'll have something to live for.
And you're like, oh, so brilliant Sicilian. This is fiction. Sorry.
So then it cuts back to the sword fight that you know from the movie where Wesley and... Inigo are like, oh, you're a good swordsman, but there's something you don't know. I'm not left-handed. And then they continue the sword fight, and then Wesley's like, I have a secret for you, or whatever it is. I'm not left-handed either. And then they go on, and it's like, you know, it's pretty funny. It's like a good little...
Do you think there's a porno, like a gay porno version of this, like the Prince's Bind, and it's just like all dudes, and there's that scene where it's like they're jerking each other off, and he's like... Something you should know. I'm not left-handed. And he's like, neither am I. And then they just switch, and it's just like milking a cow. Just no, you never thought about that?
That did not occur to me. No,
but now, it's directed by Rob Hiner, and Andre the Giant means something very different in that movie. Mm. If that doesn't exist, someone should make it. I'm just saying, that's funny.
I don't want to look up if it exists.
Private browsing, reporting for duty. Let's see.
So they have the sword fight, and Inigo loses, but
Princess Butterbutt.
Wait, did you find a real one?
I just looked up Princess Bride porn parody, and I got the Princess Bride Princess Butterbutt. That's the thing. Oh, they didn't even try.
You know, it's the lack of trying that really concerns me.
If there's one thing that porno movies are known for, it's their vaguely witty titles.
It's, you know, just the love has gone out of the craft.
And, you know, like Jurassic Poke or whatever. Sorest Rump, that's my favorite one.
Okay. I just felt like fucking.
I just felt like coming. I named him after his daddy. I'm your daddy. Who is your daddy, Jenny? But then when Lieutenant Dan invests in a fruit company, he's like, that's not what I meant. Nate, what happens next in this book?
So Wesley wins the sword fight, but doesn't kill Inigo because he's a good dude. And he just like hits him in the head. He's like, sorry, I can't have you following me. You know how it goes. And then hits him in the head. And then he goes off to his next challenge, which is the Turk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Turk.
Yep. No. I forget what he does to the Turk, though.
Chokes him out.
Chokes Wesley. Him out.
Oh, okay.
You get his backstory, yes. Too. He had a pituitary gland issue.
And parents really who love child fights.
But I like the part where, I think I highlighted it, that the Turks, he just says it matter of fact. He's like, the Turks are known for having the largest babies.
I mean,
like, really?
It's not impossible.
I didn't highlight it. It doesn't really matter that much. But he was like, he was a large baby, but not the largest. He was only 15 pounds. And it's like, Jesus Christ. I remember when Mike...
Inborn premature.
And he was born 2 weeks early, yeah.
Yeah.
When my daughter was born at the hospital, she was like a little peanut. And that the nurse passing by just said... There was a baby that was 12 pounds born today. Like, she looked like a shell-shocked veteran. I was like, oh my God, that's fucking horrifying. She looked like a toddler. And now the next spawn that's coming, my wife is almost as big as when my daughter was born. He's got like 6 more weeks in there of cooking.
Your poor wife.
Poor my little Fezzik coming.
Well, this Fezzik was 85 pounds by the time he was 1 year old, so hopefully he's not that big. Also, he was shaving by the time he was a child.
Well, he was Turkish.
Yeah.
They share a border with the Greeks. And then his backstory doesn't matter. It's just interesting, because they're such interesting, weird characters. Getting a little backstory was nice, whereas, you know,
They really lean into him being stupid more in the book than in the movie, where he's just like,
yeah,
slow but nice, and everyone loves him. But in the book, he's like clearly like he can't even count to nothing, you know.
But then he fights Wesley, but Wesley wins because he's the best fighter ever by choking him out, but not killing him again, so he can pursue and meet Vizzini for the Battle of Wits. And he's like, there are seven men traveling to St. Ives with seven wives. Like, oh, fuck. I need to be prepared for this. And then they have what is really a stupid battle of wits. A cabbage
on a boat on one side of the river.
One guy peeled 800 potatoes and won. How many potatoes did he peel? So then they have a battle of wits, which didn't matter at the end.
No, because the true wit is knowing how to win before you start. Also, Sicilians are not that smart. Though apparently Wallace Shawn in real life is actually like some sort of like weird literary nerd, like a PhD kind of guy.
He went to Harvard. He lives in Queens. My dad used to see him all the time.
I fully believe that.
They went to the same psychiatrist.
I can't believe your dad went to a psychiatrist.
Only for the meds.
Oh, okay.
Only.
There we go. All right.
It's like when my dad moved to Florida. He's like, these doctors aren't giving me pills like I need. It's like, because you probably don't need those. He was manipulating this not giving a fuck psychiatrist for decades for pills. Classic dad.
Such a dad move.
Such a dad move. Like, he used to take, because my mom worked nights and my brother and I would have, like, sometimes he had a night appointment. And we would just wait in the car. It'd be like 15 minutes. It was like those pill mills for fucking like oxycodone 15 years ago. Like you just show up and be like, yeah, still haven't, need the sleep things. Can I have the pills for that? And the guy like, whatever. And then he'd leave. And that was
sometimes I'm tired.
And he would see Wallace Shawn in the waiting room. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
That swears. I was never in the waiting room. We were in the car, so we didn't have to pay a meter.
So he just came out and said, hey, Wallace Shawn was in there? And you're like, sure, Dad.
He never knew that guy's name. But every once in a while, we'd see him in something. Like, I go to the same doctor as that guy. Like, weird, Dad. Okay. Are you getting better? True story. Okay, so Wallace Shawn. Is that guy even alive?
I have to imagine he is, yeah.
He is. He is alive.
Yeah.
Because if he died, we would have gone through the cycle of... he's definitely still there. We would have gone through the cycle of being like, hey, Wallace Shawn died, and then we go to his IMDb and try to make jokes about that he died.
The princess died.
Yeah, that would be it. Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, he has the battle of wits with the Sicilian, played by Wallace Shawn, and they and it's like, oh, which wine has the poison in it? Has the iocane powder, and he's like, oh, it's the left one. No, it's the right one. Then he's like, wait, look over there. Switches them, and then they drink. Ha 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 ha. And he laughs, and then he died. The Wallace Shawn dies, and then it's like, how did you know? And it's like, there were poison in both of them. I spent the last 2 years developing a
tolerance,
whatever it is,
immunity
to iocane powder. Which
I think it's tolerance.
I don't think that's real.
You can do that with, like, snake venom.
Yeah, that's what I was also thinking. It's like snake venom.
You can do it. It takes a very long time, but you can't do it with everything. But this is also, magic is in this book. And I don't know what iocane powder, it's just cocaine anagrammed. So, which you can build up a tolerance to cocaine, so I hear.
It's nothing to sniff at. I don't know. I actually didn't look up iocane. I assume they made it up, and I did not get that was cocaine. Because...
Oh, wait. No, it's just fake.
I mean, maybe that's a joke because all the characters, the first thing they do is they sniff it. He's like, come here, sniff this thing. And he goes, like, what is that? I don't know. It smells really good, though. It's pretty cool. Okay, get out of here. Let's go somewhere else. I don't know.
Do you like stocks? So then he rescues Buttercup, and they're, you know, she's like, you're a pirate dickhead. You killed my long lost love, Wesley. And he's like, That's what pirates do, bitch. Stop being a woman with opinions. And he slaps her in the face in the book. Doesn't hit her in the movie because that would be too cruel. And Cariel was just can't pull off being a mean guy.
He tried his best in Saw when he cut off his own foot.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's been in other things, but I couldn't name one for you.
Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Was he the dad in Liar Liar? Like the stepdad in Liar Liar?
He was the stepdad
in
Liar Liar, yeah. And Robin Hood Men in Tights and the other Saw movies when they brought him back. But then he's like, she pushes him down a mountain, and then he says, as you wish for something. And she's like, oh,
she's
I just
like,
figured
go
who it
die.
Was.
And he's like, as you wish.
Yeah.
She's like, shit, that reminds me of something. I left the stove on. And then he's like, oh. And then she tumbles down after him into the ravine. She realizes.
Into the fire swamp.
Well, yes. They're getting there. And then they have a reunion. And William Goldman is like, there was no reunion. And that pissed me off. And so I wrote one. But then the publisher's like, dude, you can't do that when you abridge a book. You don't get to make new shit. You have to take stuff out. And he's like, wow, Bolton, no. So here, I hate my publishers. Write to this address and they will send you that scene. Which apparently was a real thing.
Wait, but they,
you could do it?
Yeah, you could really write to the publisher, but they wouldn't send you that scene. They made it into a joke about like publishing rights and, you know, couldn't get the fictional S. Morgenstern to like, you know, agree to it and stuff like that.
But every time the book was reprinted, they like, you know, changed the address if they had to, or eventually made it online. It's like email this person or whatever in the footnotes. So they and they changed the letter after the movie came out to reflect the fact that there had been a movie adaptation of the film. But it's a pretty dedicated joke.
It's a living document.
Yeah, that's what the founding fathers meant. Don't you get it? It's bare arms, like rawr. Then they realize they should be together, and there is no reunion scene. And then if it wasn't obvious to me yet, but it's very clear then that Princess Buttercup is stupid, like exceptionally stupid.
He was wearing a mask.
No, but like she says something like, I meant every syllabub. And he's like, she means syllable, but she's dumb, but she's so hot. She's so fucking hot. That's what, yeah, syllabubs. I hate syllabubs.
All about the syllabubs. Show me your syllabubs.
Yeah, it's like Wolverine. It's like, what's up, syllabub? And you're like, okay, that's fucking great. How about them titties? So she's really dumb, which will be obvious more and more throughout the book now, unless you're smarter than me, which is probable, and you knew it earlier. And then they go into the swamp, the fire swamp, which there's a footnote. It's like, it's like a swamp, but there's stuff that lights on fire, but it's basically just a swamp. You're like, got it. Thanks. Thanks for clarifying, Bill.
And then he gets captured.
All the while the prince has been following this, and the prince is like half MacGyver, half Native American guy from a 1960s Western. Like he can just like look at the ground and he'll be like, there was a fight here.
A plane crashed here.
Yeah, he's at that Walker, Texas Ranger thing happening. There was a giant who fought a man. The man won. The giant fell here, but he is free now.
And there's
he's the greatest hunter ever.
The joke where he picks up the fucking Iocane powder bag, he sniffs it, he's like, it's Iocane powder. But the joke is that it was odorless. It's like, you can't smell it. He's just that good.
Yeah. But he's following them, and he gets to the top of the ravine. He's like, they both went down to this ravine, and they went into the fire swamp. And what happens there, Nate?
And then they get captured by the prince.
Well, they go through somehow. It. It's dramatic. Oh, my God. Anyway.
But yeah, okay. Yeah, it's the fire swamp, and there's the giant rats.
The ROUs,
like
man.
The rodents of unusual size.
Yeah. The capybaras.
Which in the book, they are capybaras, but in the film, they are man-sized rats.
Yeah, well, somewhere between a capybara and a man, I guess. Capoeiras, I believe.
Size of a Brazilian man.
Yes. They're wax.
All legs. They make it through after fighting off the rats, but he's been bitten several times by the big rats and the lightning sand, which is not the same as the snow sand, which is a different thing, which they go into, but I forget the joke about those.
I don't know if there was a joke other than just... being a know-it-all-ish about the lightning things stand that didn't matter.
The lightning stand is powdery like snow, but the snow sand is fast like lightning. I was like, oh, what the fuck? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's really what it was.
It's a bit. It's all a bit.
And I do like the part where she falls into the sand. She goes, and she shouted out, Wesley, what the fuck are you doing? Or whatever it was. And it's like, but she couldn't because the sand filled her lungs. So she just got out, whoa! I think that was pretty funny. That's exactly what happens when you are buried under the sand, I'm told.
Yeah, sound mouth. But then they make it out, and then they're getting to his boat, but the prince is there, and he's like, ah, gotcha, bitch. Come on, let's go and kill this other guy. She's like, if you don't kill him, I'll come away peacefully. And he's like, that's fine. And so they leave, and they're like, we're going to kill you anyway, just kidding. He's like, ah, I knew you were.
He calls him out. He says, we're men of action. Let's not bullshit. And he's like, I appreciate that about you.
I am a man of action. I just came for your mother's house last night, in fact.
Yeah, that's true.
But so Prince Humperdinck imprisons Wesley in his dungeon with his like death machine.
Oh, wait, where is the dungeon though, Nate?
Is it in the zoo?
It has a name.
It's in the Zoo of Death.
The Zoo of Death, which, do you remember how it's arranged?
Five different levels, just depending on categorization of deathliness of animal, based on speed, poison, buoyancy.
I don't know if all that was in the book. I believe you, but it was the gist is there. And on one level, you know, I imagine it's like, you know, ferrets or something, like things that are pretty easy to kill. The top level is reserved for man, the deadliest game. But like level four is probably a fucking hippocalypse. And this beer's like 3 years old. I was like, what am I going to do with this? Like, wait. Oh my God, this is almost 2 full years old. This is Hippocalypse from KCBC. A fruited sour with hippos attacking things. Hippopocalypse. I can't even fucking say it right. God damn it. This is what I get for pre-gaming. Hippopotopotus? You give him the easy ones. This is a sour ale with tart cherry, black raspberries, and key lime. Oh, God. All right. Let's see if the years have been kind to it. They have not.
Oh, God. That's not on them, though.
That's on me. That's on me, guys. Sorry.
It's even more sour now.
That is not pleasant.
Though I guess we don't know what it was like before.
No. I bought it from my father-in-law because he likes these beers, but then he one day decided he would not drink them ever more. He was like, Chief Joseph. He was like, no more. And then I was like, all right, that's cool. And then a year later, he was like, you could drink those. It's like a weird power move. I was like, and then I had my, okay. And
wait
like
until they're old.
This is very insulting. But it's terrible. I'm so sorry, KCBC. I'm sure it was much nicer. Though I'm skeptical of the key lime in there, frankly. But it was probably better than this.
Mm.
But it's still better than being tortured. Back to the book, Nate. See what it did there? Set you up.
Mm, really set it up.
So Wesley's like getting tortured for like weeks. And Buttercup is like, I hate you so much, Humperdinck.
Well, she's not that. She's saying like, hey, I don't love you. I really love Wesley. This is not a beer.
Oh, shit. I thought it was.
No, it did sound like a segue. I realized it did sound like a segue. But no, she's like, you know, I'm sorry. You're cool and all, but I really love Wesley. And he's like, that's all right. I get it. Look, we'll send out a ship in every direction that we can. We'll send out a ship with a letter that you've written, and
you write the same letter four times.
I'll write the same letter.
Whoever the fastest ships, so saith Chris Sarandon. Do you know, by the way, that actor was the voice of Jack Skellington, and the reason Susan Sarandon is named Susan Sarandon, like, it's
not they're not related.
No, that was his first wife. I don't know if it was her first husband too, but yeah.
Oh,
they were married in the late 60s.
Jesus. Yeah, I don't know anything about him other than...
You see him in things occasionally. Oh, it's that guy. What's he from again? He was the speaking voice of Jack Skellington.
Okay, good for him. Killing it. Killing it out there. Just iconic roles, really, that we know about.
And then she's like, okay, fine. After a month or whatever, if he has not returned, or if he's not come for me, then I will marry you. And he's like, aha. And Humperdinck is like, yes, thank God. Meanwhile, Wesley's been, you know, in the dungeon, just being like tortured all this time. And then after...
By Count Rugen.
I remember the order of everything. Yeah, Count Rugen. Okay, so... Everyone minus Vizzini, the tag team trio, no, just duo, just of Inigo and Fezzik.
The other two guys.
Well, they had always been taught, if we get separated, go back to the beginning. But it took Fezzik a long time to remember the rhyme, because it was like, fool, fool, the beginning is the rule or something like that. But he kept being like, idiot, idiot, go to Michigan Schmidiot. And he's like, oh, what the fuck that means, or whatever it was. Like, there were stupid things like that. And Montoya, Inigo Montoya, has become an alcoholic in the Sherwood Forest of Florin. But they eventually get back.
And they're like, we must save Wesley. And so they're like, okay. And they're like, well, he's so smart, he can help us. He can, you know, he can, Inigo is like, he can help me get revenge on the count, or no, on what's his name?
Rugen. Humperdinck. Yeah, well, Rugen is the one that Montoya wants the revenge on.
The six-fingered man.
Right.
Six-fingered man.
Right, on Count Rugen. And, but we need to find him, and I do not remember what happens. How do they know where he is?
Well, the count, Humperdinck is like, it's the quintcentennial or whatever of Florin, and he's going to get married because the king has finally died. So he's going to have all this pageantry, and he's going to kill Buttercup, but blame Gilder, and that way he'll be able to do whatever the fuck he wants. Basically, he's going to Hitler it, emergency powers. And then he tells his chief goon, clear out the thieves' forest. Because I want there to be no possible way that anybody thinks that the thieves did it. Even though, you know, I want them to only be able to blame Gilder. And the guy's like, whatever. You know, they go back and forth. But he eventually does that. And he's like, the guy goes, I'm going to need a brute squad. He's like, get a brute squad then. Fuck it. Beat the shit out of him. I don't care. What's habeas corpus? And then he gets Fezzik is one of the brutes punching the fuck out of people in the forest. And Inigo Montoya is there drunk out of his mind, and they reckon, they're like, oh, it's us. And then they realize what they have to do together. Like, that's how they get back. And I don't know why they go to the castle, though. That I'm forgetting. Between the three of us, we must know the plot.
They hear him yelling?
Is, oh, because he's crying. It's like a dog. Yeah.
They figure out that Rugen is the guy with six fingers, and they know they're both not plans guys. They need someone who will make a plan, so they're going to go get Wesley. And they know that he's been captured for some reason, probably because he was on the brute squad, and one of the other guys said something or some shit. I forget, actually, yeah. It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't.
But so they bust in.
And they bust in, they find Wesley, and he's dead, because Humperdinck has put the machine up to level 20.
Fezzik is like, hey, I count, because Fezzik has been working with the government. He's like, Count Rugen has six fingers. And then they're like, ah, revenge. That's what it is. Well, Inigo Montoya says revenge.
So Wesley is dead. And they're like, uh-oh, like, that's bad. Quick, find the Miracle Man. And so they go to the Miracle Man, who's played by Billy Crystal. And he's even in the book, they're like, yeah, my editor said this part was really Jewish, but I left it in anyway.
He says there can't be Jews in this foreign country. It's like, I guess.
And then there's the whole scene where it's like, oh, what do we have to?
He's, you know, mostly dead.
He's just mostly dead, not entirely dead. And so he gives them makes them the miracle thing. But it's only for an hour, except he's not actually very good at it. So it's really only about 40 minutes. But also, Wesley can talk, but he can't move. He can't move his body. So they're like, and Inigo and Fezzik are like, you must help us. Quick, you have a plan. He's like, what is the sum total of our assets? And it's like, you and me. Oh, well, this will never work. And it's like, and the wheelbarrow. Oh, wait, I have an idea. So they... scare off everyone from the castle by Fezzik wearing a big dark cloak.
Using a Holocaust cloak, whatever that is.
Just swastikas. Just,
yeah, it was like, oh God, Nazis, and they all ran.
Just the SS runes all over it.
A Holocaust cloak?
Yeah, in the book and the movie, it's a cloak that lights on fire, or is able to be lit on fire and not like hurt the person inside. I don't know why he chose to call it a Holocaust cloak.
Doesn't Holocaust have something to do with burning? That word, like etymologically?
The word Holocaust comes from the ancient Greek and means burnt offering.
So they get into the castle. Inigo fights the six-fingered guy, but he also gets stabbed in the stomach, but then is like, be strong. Remember what your teachers told you. And he like, you know, finds the inner strength, and then he kills him.
Well, the guy dies of fright in the book, which is much less satisfying.
Well, they kind of had that in the movie where when Inigo finally presents, like, my name, blah, 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 he just, Christopher Guest just runs. he doesn't even stand for the fight.
That part was in the book, too.
But he's a pussy. It's like
yeah,
telegraphed that he's a punk. He kills weak people that he can torture. I mean, he reveled in torturing Wesley. It's like, I'm going to write the book on pain.
Speaking of punk, like one of my favorite albums by a punk band called the Flatliners, at the end of one of the songs, there's like a clip from a movie, like just the audio. And I didn't realize it was from this. It's just that line after Inigo runs into the room and the Count throws a knife at him and stabs him in the stomach and he's like bleeding out. And he's like, you've been practicing for 20 years to come all the way to kill me and fail just now? And he says, I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard. How marvelous. And I was like, I've heard that line 1,000 times on an album. I was like, oh, what is that from? And I heard it in this, like, oh my God, it's from fucking Princess Bride.
I feel like The Princess Bride is one of those movies that people quote more than they watch.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. It's like Anchor.
It's very quotable.
It's like Anchorman.
Yeah.
And then it goes to the bedroom scene, also known as Wesley is lying on the bed. So they have the marriage, Buttercup and Humperdinck have the marriage. He's like, just say man and wife. And the guys, Eric Idle doing marriage. It's very, very quotable.
Was it Eric Idle? I don't think it was.
Wasn't it?
I thought it, I watched it the other day, and it was somebody I didn't recognize.
Oh,
the name.
Oh, was the other Monty Python guy?
I think it was just a random. I mean, it was not a random guy because there's eight people in the movie. But it's Peter Cook, who is, quote, the impressive clergyman, was what he was credited as.
Yeah. Well, okay. I have not seen it. I have not seen it in a long time, but I thought it was Eric Idle. Well, okay.
Now you know.
Apparently I'm wrong.
Educational podcast.
Oh yeah, there it is. Yep. Okay. Looks British.
Oh,
anyway,
is so, British.
So Wesley is there on the bed, and Buttercup comes and he's like, "Wesley, you're alive!" And then he's like, "Why are you not jumping up to meet me?" And he's like, "I just can't move very much." But then he has this mind game with Humperdinck, and Wesley's like, Humperdinck is like, duel to the death, and Wesley's like, duel to the pain. It's like, what? Wait, what is that? And then, if you win, you kill me. If I win, I will just cut off your feet, and then your hands, and then put out your eyes, and disfigure you, and, but I will not. Oh, running time, 98 minutes. Yeah, that's a short movie. So, and then I will disfigure you, but I will leave your ears so you can hear the sounds of the children mocking
the ears?
You.
No, I leave those.
Yeah.
Nice try, fucker.
And so you can hear people yelling, oh my God, what is that thing?
Yeah.
And then Humperdinck just gives up. He's like, oh, I can't deal with that. And then he lies down on the ground and has Buttercup ties him up. Maybe that's what he was looking for. I don't know. Maybe that's what he wanted the whole time. And then Wesley is like, you know, this dying thing kind of sucked. I don't want to do it again. And then it's and then they're together, and then it's the end. Yeah.
They ride off with Inigo and Fezzik, and then the narrator guy is like, and that's where I'm going to end it. If you want to know how they Morgenstern actually ended it, you know, it ends up with those one of those like the lady or the tiger endings where you're not sure what happens because are they going to get caught? Who knows? But like, fuck that. It sucks. So just let's say they got away.
Yeah, like the prince's troops are closing in. Do they get away or not? I don't know. And then in some editions of the book, apparently, I don't know if all of them, there's a, here's a snippet of the sequel book, Buttercup's Baby, which I didn't read this time. So I don't remember what happens. Did you guys read it?
No.
Nope.
All right, fuck it. Didn't matter.
No. I refuse to acknowledge it. Non-canon.
I'm just skimming the Wikipedia article on it, if it matters at all.
Wait, does it actually exist? It's not just like an excerpt from some bullshit thing he made up?
It's in the epilogue.
But he didn't like write a whole other book.
It's not even clear if he like meant to make another book or not. Because Goldman was, it's hard to tell his tone. But he had said like he wanted to have another, for the 50th anniversary of the book, he wanted to have a sequel.
Say 50th?
Which was last year. And oh, so, yeah, but he died in 2018. But he, you know, apparently the 30th anniversary edition of the book, he said that he'll have it finished by then. And in an interview he gave in like 2007 or something, he was like, I really want to write it. I try to write a sequel. I just can't do it. I got lucky the first time. I hope I get lucky again. And he didn't, but there is a little section of stuff. So, yeah, it doesn't matter. You're fine without it. Apparently, it only starts appearing in, like, the 25th anniversary edition. Or it's just other little mishaps for them. So what do you guys think?
I thought it was pretty good. The only part I didn't like was the weird introduction, which is actually the book and not an introduction. I just thought it went on too long. You still need it in order for like the other stuff to kind of make sense about how, and then I took out these 25 pages about, you know, the lady's shoes and stuff like that. So that does definitely make sense, but it just could have been a little bit shorter, especially because it's the beginning of the book. It's the first chapter.
There's like 5 or 6 pages in there of him like at the hotel with a hot lady hitting on him at the pool. And he's like, ooh, this hot lady's here, but I have to call every bookstore in New York to have them send this copy of the book to my son. Oh, the hot lady's still talking to me. And you're like, I still don't know if this is part of the book or not.
Yeah, that did drag a bit. I get why that whole long intro was there. And it could have been tighter. But I thought the rest of the book was great. I liked his little interjections. I liked the things where he'd say, I guess it was Morgenstern saying shit like, the prince would, you know, sit there, you know, because he's trying to like, where in time does this story take place? And then it'd be like, this is before the telephone, but this is after horses.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Like, yeah. You
know, those things.
Yeah.
This is after haircuts.
And there's one where it's like, then they sat down to have their pile of like sludge, you know, like stew. And it's like the first creature that climbed out of the immortal primordial sludge had stew. Like that's the ancient dish. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah, it had a lot of funny bits.
I liked it. And once it got going, it was very fast.
Yeah, it's not long.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's no fat on it. There's really not any passages where you're like, well, I don't need this. I think it kept to it pretty well. So the movie. You guys have seen the movie probably before you read the book.
Oh, yeah. I watched it again this week just to, because it had been a little while. I mean, I think it's, most of it's firmly etched in a lot of people's minds. I've seen it a bunch of times. So, but it had been a minute.
I have seen it. Probably a couple times, but not in a long time. But still, as I was reading the book, I was like, oh, yeah. No, I'm literally picturing the exact scene from the movie because it's the exact same scene.
Because he wrote the screenplay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. So,
I mean, obviously, if he's already won two Oscars for writing screenplays, might as well have him just write this one, too.
Saves money.
Yep.
You don't have to pay him and hire a screenwriter.
I think, though.
You know, the biggest differences from the movie to the, or the books to the movie is that intro thing, because they have to create a different frame. And the frame in the movie, I've read the book twice now, and then I watched the movie for the first time ever. I mean, I've seen pieces of it, and I know the quotes. I think the frame in the movie doesn't work well. I think the frame in the movie is shitty, because instead of it being the guy going, oh, this is when I wrote the book, I read the book as a kid, and I wanted to read it to my kid, it just is Fred Savage and Columbo. And Columbo is like, I'm gonna one more thing. I'm gonna read you a book, and then he reads the book to him. And the whole point of the original book was that the father skimmed over the boring parts. But in the movie, he doesn't really do that. Instead, there's a couple moments basically where he goes, "No, he can't be dead," or "She can't do that," and he goes, "Oh, okay," and then he just changes the plot. Kind of doesn't make sense if he's reading a book.
Well, in the movie, the part where he changes, like, where he thinks someone's dead, he says, like, "Let me just keep going." And then when the princess does something, and he's like, "She can't marry the guy." I was like, "Let me just continue." And the kid's like, "Fine." And he goes on, and it's like, "Oh, it was just a dream." And the kid's like, "Okay." I guess like, "Now will you shut up and let me read the book?"
Well, there is that in the book too. There's a part where he goes, "How about that for what a fake out? Morgenstern made you think that." This, but it wasn't. Ha ha. That pissed me off because my dad stopped that night. And then the next day I realized it was a fake out. Mm. But I think the frame of the movie is kind of meh. I think it's kind of the weakest part.
There's just so much less of it. Like, you almost don't need it. But yeah. I mean, you really don't need it. I mean, unless you're like really into like the meta jokes about skipping over histories of foreign countries. Sure. But if you're just like in it for the plot, then the frame isn't necessary both ways.
Yeah, but since it's how it started, yeah. You know, to make the adaptation of it, to leave it out would be very odd. Also, I feel like the movie is really abrupt.
I mean, it's a little short, but that's just because that was the length of movies back then. Like, movies were 90, 95 minutes. Now they're all 2 hours plus.
Well, for a comedy especially, yeah.
Yeah, like, it was perfectly within range of normal movies. Like, that's how long they were.
But there's a, like, so for one part of the movie that seemed to just jump out of nowhere is Billy Crystal's character. Like, whereas in the book, they mention Miracle Max a few times. Maybe I missed it in the movie because I only saw it one time.
I mean, in the book, they offhandly mentioned, like, there was a miracle guy, but they fired him on, like, one right. paragraph.
That's foreshadowing. That's enough. It was there.
In the movie, they do just bring it up. But, you know, is it that different? I don't know if it matters that much.
It's not. I feel like if I... Because I remember being a kid back in 1993 or something, and this movie was on TBS. And then being at a friend's house, and him and his brother and their dad loved this movie, and I'd never seen it. And I was not interested. It was. I only realized watching it this weekend. I was like, that's what... like this weird flashback. That's what they were watching. And they were laughing and quoting and whatever. And I just didn't. It was not for me. I didn't know it. If I had seen it as a 7-year-old and watched it a bunch of times since then, I'm sure I would love it and quote it the same way as people who have seen it for, you know, many years. But seeing it for the first time as a man who's 37, I was like, yeah, it's fine. It's overhyped. It's not that great.
I mean, it's impossible for anything to live up to that amount of hype.
It's funny. It's just really, really abrupt and short, and
the best jokes have been shorter than the book is they cut out Inigo and Fezzik's backstories, and they cut out like the zoo of death that doesn't matter.
You know, that was definitely a streamlining of that part.
I think everything else is in there. The book's not very long.
No, it's a breezy read. I'm not saying the movie's bad, by the way. They're
both short.
It's been a long time since I've seen the movie, but I don't remember thinking when I saw it, probably 20 years ago, that it was too short. I don't remember that judgment at the time. I was also a kid, though, so I was like, yeah, okay, this is fine.
This is appropriate length for a film.
You weren't a kid 20 years ago, Nate. Let's not.
You're right.
I think whichever one you experienced first is the one that's in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even having read the book first, and I read the book the first time like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, I knew what it was. I knew the movie enough. Just having heard people and met nerds, that's what they were talking about. But that's fine. I saw something interesting. I was reading about this, and apparently, because Hollywood people are fucking just complete cunts, somebody wanted to remake this. Like some studios, like, let's do a remake of The Princess Bride.
Yeah,
a reboot. And
with the everyone Rock
involved
there,
who's so. Still alive was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like,
I think everybody's still alive except
Andre the Giant's dead.
I think everybody else is still alive.
Peter Cook is dead. But
all the main scene. Characters.
Yeah, the rest of them are alive. But I think they're all like, well, obviously they're not going to be in it. If it's a reboot or whatever.
No, they should just use all the same people and just pretend they're all young. It's part of the fantasy.
That would be interesting. But Christopher Guest, no, it was Jamie Lee Curtis, who was married to Christopher Guest, said something. She's like, there are very few perfect films. Why would you want to fuck with this one? Like, this is one of the few. And I was like, is it a perfect film? I don't know. But I mean,
it's perfect in the way that, like, it's good. It's great. People like it. There's nothing you can really like. There's no reason to make it different or like there's nothing you can improve upon. It's just there. It's very efficient. One and done. Well done, everybody. Everyone likes this movie.
No, I didn't dislike it. I just thought, you know, after all these years, nothing was going to live up to the hype. But it was fine. I like the book. I have read enough or pretended to read enough of, you know, Ivanhoe and shit like that to get what he was making fun of. That I like the book too. Like, so they're all great.
This is if only for this story is this an important piece of historical of history, this film, is when Andre the Giant let out a 16-second long fart while they were shooting. And then I think the director said, Andre, are you okay? And Andre said, I am now, boss.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that entirely.
16
Didn't Andre
seconds.
The Giant, like, when they were, like, wrestling in Japan, he couldn't even fit in the bathrooms there?
No,
he couldn't. He would just, like, lay newspaper out on the bed and shit on it. Like a dog.
I mean, He was among the best of us. Much like The Princess Bride, universally loved. Everyone loved that guy.
Some story about how many beers he could drink.
He drank like 100 beers in a night or something like that. Yeah. I mean, look up the picture of him holding a beer can. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually struck watching the movie because it's one of those things that internet weirdos like myself have wondered. How tall was Andre the Giant? Because he was in WWE or WWF.
Yeah, when he was fighting Cary Elwes, he didn't seem that much bigger.
Exactly. He's obviously a fucking giant dude. But like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like he's not Victor Wembanyama. Like, he's not that
those
tall.
Those are tall guy deep cuts, you know?
Victor Wembanyama is the number one draft pick last year.
Oh, I have no idea what the fuck that is.
Oh, he's a 7'4" okay. NBA player. But he, Andre the Giant was not only, he's around 7 feet tall, but with the mass of like a baseball team.
Yeah, because all the tall, tall guys generally are like pretty thin, but Andre the Giant is, if one of those tall guys ate four other tall guys and just kept growing out.
Like a Highlander.
Yeah. Just consumed them.
According to Wikipedia, his build weight, I think it was as a weightlifter, was as a wrestler, was 520 pounds.
Yeah, but the WWF was full of shit. Like, they've always exaggerated height and weight.
Are you saying wrestling is fake?
I didn't go that far, Nate.
Scales are real, though.
Watch your whore mouth.
He could have been.
No, but
pounds.
He was also billed at 7'4", which he clearly was not. But he might have been like, and this sounds ridiculous to say, he might have been only 6'10", which is still a fucking ginormous person.
6'10" around also.
But you see his hands in the movie when he like grabs Cary Elwes and like his hand is the size of,
it's a catcher's
mitt. Another Cary Elwes. It's great. Like I was, it was more struck by like not how tall, how giant he was, not in height, but in like, I mean, it's because he had
he had his own gravitational pull.
Yeah, he had a pituitary issue.
There's also a picture of Andre the Giant next to Hulk Hogan, and the Hulk Hogan is tiny compared to Andre the Giant. So he's a big dude.
He's a giant, no doubt. But like, you know, how giant? But people want to know. Go to Celeb Heights. Watch people argue about this.
He wasn't the tallest, but he was the biggest. The most giantest.
Yeah, he's like the General Sherman. You know, that tree. It's not the tallest tree, but the most massive tree. Come on, you guys don't know tree trivia? Yes.
I've been there. And I was with General Sherman. Yeah.
You knew him when he was corporal. So anyway, that's way off task. I like the book. I think if you like, I mean, if you've seen the movie, statistically, you have seen the movie and not read
just
the book.
Just by, you know, chance at this point in your life.
But I think it's a funny book. You know, the movie, you don't need to know any of that other, you don't need to have read The Three Musketeers to get the jokes in the movie. To get the jokes in the book, you kind of need to have struggled with one or two of those old shitty adventure books. And there's the passage, because in this one, there's the part, he's like, I cut out that part, though this professor at Columbia says, this is the most satirical part. And like, it sucks. No one likes that part. And that's 100% true in terms of if you sit through a class studying one of those kind of books.
No, yeah, where he's like, oh, here we have 70 pages on Princess Buttercup learning how to be a princess. And here he's clearly satirizing the nobility and how silly it all is. And it's like, okay, sure.
But you need to have read a book that has that kind of crap in it where you're like, ah, ha, ha, that's funny. I don't know. If you like fantasy books, you probably just enjoy this in general. Or if you like snark.
It's witty.
Yeah.
You know, it is a book that I'm surprised was written by an American guy because it does sound very British.
I could hear that.
In terms of everybody's like snarky lines, they all sound like old-timey British stuff.
Nate, you gave it 1 star? What's wrong with you?
I did.
No. Let's see. And Jimmy gave it 4 stars? What the fuck?
I gave it 4 stars.
Yeah, I'd give it 4 stars.
4 stars. Inconceivable.
I gave it 4 stars because to me, like, the movie is the definitive version, and this was like a longer version, which added stuff I didn't really care about. But also, the movie is not like the greatest film I've ever seen. I mean, everyone loves it, but it's not like, wow, that one changed my life. It's just like a solid, great, very nice, unobjectionable.
Nice.
Inconceivable. All right, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on X at drunkguysbc.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram at drunkguysbookclub.
We never mentioned that Patreon, and no one's listening right now, but go throw away your money there. You'll figure it out if you really want to.
And throw away your money on Goodreads. Open up goodreads.com.
Like Amazon did.
Take out money from your wallet or purse. Throw it at the screen.
We'll get it.
We'll read.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.